Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
George Bernard Shaw said, "The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, make them." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who has made her own circumstances. Today's Playmakers company delivers custom-designed furniture to consumers in 30 days. With us today is a president who came to the United States with two suitcases and $500. This great playmaker is Veronica Schnitzius. She's president of American Leather. Now, Veronica serves as president of American Leather, a Dallas-based $300 million manufacturer of custom order furniture. Previously as COO, Veronica helped disrupt the furniture industry with Japanese lean manufacturing innovations to deliver custom-made furniture 75% faster than industry standard, allowing retailers to invest only in their floor samples. In 1990, American Leather was founded by engineers on the revolutionary idea that handcrafted furniture could be made and delivered to your home in 30 days. What began as a small team in a borrowed facility has grown to more than 600 employees, housed in a state-of-the-art 350,000-square-foot factory. A native of Colombia, Veronica credits her success to manufacturing innovation and excellence and culturally ingrained diversity, reflected in managing first-generation immigrants from 22 different countries where family wellness and scholarship programs are provided. Well, we're going to have a lot to talk about. Veronica, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you came to the United States with two suitcases and $500. What did you do first when you came to this country? What was your first job when you came here?
So I came to this country 17 years ago as an engineer for another furniture company called the Leather Center.
So you were in the furniture business in Colombia?
No, I was an intern. So I'm an engineer by trade. And when I was going through engineering school, I have to do an internship. And Faith brought me to Dallas to this furniture company called Leather Center. I worked with them for 6 months, and they offered me a job. So I went back to Colombia, graduated, packed my bags, and started this job.
Then the question is, why the furniture business? There's lots of different areas an engineer can go into, but why furniture?
It's where I got my internship. I wasn't planning to be in the furniture industry. It wasn't a dream of mine. I don't have family in the furniture industry. It's where I got the job, and I thought, cool, I'm going to Dallas.
It just happened. That was the internship job you got, and here you are, president of a company in the United States.
Right.
Well, let's talk about American Leather a little bit, because I've gone through your factory, had the tour, was amazed, and if anybody comes through here, they're going to want to buy your product right away. You have lots of different products you manufacture, so tell us a little bit about American Leather and how it's different from other furniture manufacturers.
I think American Leather is different because we were founded under the lean principle. So from the beginning, the company had the mindset that we can do things differently than any other furniture manufacturer. The company was founded on the principles of speed, quality, and innovation. When you compare our competitors, they have more the traditional method, and lead times tend to be longer. They tend to have bigger batch sizes, so they want to build 5, 10, 20 pieces. And the model that we have here was built one at a time. So that allows us a lot of flexibility to be able to do things faster.
So you're selling through retailers all around the United States.
Correct.
So when I go into a retailer, I can pick out my leather or fabric. I can pick out the design. And once that's all put together, I'll have that piece shipped to my home within 30 days. Is that correct?
Yeah, the way it works, the retailer will send us the order for your sofa, and we get it out of this factory in 21 calendar days. And then it goes to the retailer, and the retailer will call you to deliver to your home within that 30-day window.
Okay. Well, tell us about some of the products you have, because you have sofas, you have sleepers, you have recliners. Talk about that.
Yeah, we have like the regular sofa, stationary product, but one big part of the company is innovation through mechanical innovation. So one of our most important products is the Comfort Sleeper. is a sleeper that is different than what most people think about sleepers. No sprints, no bars, no compromise is what we say. So it's a wood platform with 5 inches of foam on top of it. That's kind of our star product. We also develop a recliner. We call it the comfort recliner, from a piece of paper up to the mechanism. It feels like a first-class seat in an airplane. So it's a little different. It allows you to go to any position. It doesn't make you go to one position from open to close. That's another product that is very important. We also just developed a product called the Comfort Air, which is a very interesting thing to describe. I think the hardest thing for us has been describing it to somebody that hasn't experienced it. But basically, it's a recliner, a glider, a swivel, but it doesn't look like anything like that. So I would challenge you, if you're listening to this podcast, to go to a retail store and try. It's called the Comfort Air. It's an amazing product.
I've looked at your Comfort Air. I'm looking one on your website right now, and the website is AmericanLeather.com. It does not look like a recliner.
Correct.
But it is a recliner.
Yep.
That got my interest very quickly.
Yep.
I love recliners. And and that's what first thing I thought, too, walking through your showroom. It looks like a seat I'd be sitting in a first-class lounge chair in an airplane.
One thing that for us is important is, you know, mechanical products, recliners are the most known mechanical products. They tend to look pretty big, so most people think about a recliner as a lazy boy product. It's a great product. If you like that kind of look, it's great. What we have been trying to do is, how can we hide that mechanical part of it and make it really pretty? I would say that today, still, most consumers, the decision maker is a woman. And most women tend not to like the big, bulky product. So what we're trying to do is, how do we do something that is aesthetically pleasing, but it has that innovation that allows you to be very comfortable.
And again, I'm looking at your Comfort Air on your website. And if you would have told me that was a recliner without having sat on it, I wouldn't believe you, because it is very thin. Let's talk about your time at American Leather, because you began as an engineer. I'm sure because of that, your mind is always working that way as an engineer, even though you're president of the company. But what route did you take? What happened for you to start as an engineer and get to become president of American Leather?
Well, a lot of things happen. I think that, you know, I think that luck is when opportunity and desire and passion meet. So I had tremendous passion for everything I do, sometimes to my fault, right? I'm not really good at hiding my feelings. So from the beginning, I was very lucky that I had a great mentor, the founder of this company, Bob Duncan. I think he saw that I had a lot of desire. So, and I had tremendous passion for the job. So I started as a manufacturing engineer, designing processes, equipment, capacity planning on the factory. And then there was an opportunity to manage the maintenance department. So they say, hey, you want to manage 4 mechanics? I said, sure. You know, I was 23 years old. So that was an interesting journey, too, because they saw me like this little kid that didn't know anything. And I learned a lot with them and gained their respect just walking on their shoes, right? So that's part of what it takes. Then the opportunity came up to run the factory. And that was a little bit of a bigger challenge. Most people were younger than me. Most were men, having a little bit of a different accent, talking different, looking differently. But you just have to gain their respect by respecting what they do and appreciating every little thing that they do. From then, I had the opportunity also to go to product development. That was another fun challenge, but amazing to understand how everything started. And that was my first kind of job where I had customer interaction, because we develop a lot of proprietary products for companies like Room and Board or Restoration Hardware or Herman Miller. And in product development, I was the bridge between the customer and the company. So that's how I learned a little bit from engineering, what is very black and white, to kind of get a little bit more than the gray line. And that was a fun journey going like, what do you mean? I kind of like it. I needed to have a number or like a dollar amount. So I learned a lot there. And from then, I got the opportunity to become the VP of operations. So I have all manufacturing, maintenance, and product development, and supply chain. I started negotiating with suppliers, visiting tanneries in Italy, going to China to get product all over the U.S. So that was another part of the development. While I was doing all that, I was also going to school to get my MBA. So I went to school at UTA in Arlington, and I learned business. So another part of my brain that I didn't have before being an engineer activated that part of my brain. And ultimately, I became the CEO. So I was responsible for all operations of the company from concept all the way to shipping. And that was an amazing journey, seeing this company grow from, you know, we had another facility 10 minutes from where we are today, and we moved it to this facility and now grew the facility by 50%. So that has been a very fun journey. And 2 years ago, I got the opportunity to become the president. So now finance, sales, marketing, a completely different part of my job. But it has been a really fun journey.
Well, congratulations on that. But based on what you said, you really... A lot of your leadership development was on-the-job training.
Correct.
Because you learned leadership by actually interacting with all the employees. The other nice thing, as you were saying that, is you got a chance to see the other jobs that you were promoted to as you were doing your other job. So it wasn't moving into another job and not knowing how to do it. You had some experience from seeing what was happening. But you do have an interesting plant here. Not only is it brand new, it's large, you get your product out in 21 calendar days, but you have an interesting way that you work with your people. But let's talk about your people first. The majority of your people came from other countries, spoke other languages. I understand from the tour that I have, English is spoken, but the primary language is Spanish.
Correct.
I understand there's a Vietnamese and probably some other languages too. But the question is, do you focus on either immigrants coming to the United States or those that don't speak English primarily?
You know, we would like to have more people from the United States in this factory. Unfortunately, we don't get that many applicants. It's kind of sad, but manufacturing is kind of seen as a dirty job in a lot of places. And we are very proud of the environment. It's air conditioning.
But the fact is your factory is extremely clean.
Correct. And I always tell the employees, you know, we spend more time here than with our own families. That's the way the world is, sadly, right, in many ways. But if you don't keep the facilities clean, the uniforms clean, how can you produce an amazing product? So it's not just for the product, it's for them. We want an environment that is amazing so they come to work and they actually enjoy it. So we have a lot of immigrants just because immigrants want to do this job. We're very proud to pay them more than the market. We are very proud to give them benefits that they wouldn't get anywhere because at the end of the day, we can have the fancier equipment. We can have the fanciest factory, but our employees are our biggest asset. And pay money, it takes you so far, but it's the intangible things that make the big difference.
In looking at your factory, I understand that there are certain uniforms or shirts, different colors. You can tell what job that person has. And I'm sure your paying for those shirts has gone down because the employees have lost over 3,000 pounds. Talk about that and why you believe in physical fitness and why that's so important to your company.
You know, so personally, I believe in physical fitness a lot. You know, I think that mentally, you know, you have to have your body kind of aligned with your mind. So maybe 7 years ago, the HR manager came to me and said, hey, we're seeing that people is overweight, people is missing work because of different health issues. What about we start a Biggest Loser? And I said, oh, sure. How much money we need? $10,000, whatever. I said, okay. So I went to at that point, I was the VP of manufacturing. I went to the president and said, we need $10,000. And he goes, well, what is the ROI, the return on investment? And I said, I don't know, but I think we should do it. They said, well, let's think about it. I went to HR and I said, let's do it. And we are in a meeting, in a board meeting, and employees are running around the factory because they're trying to lose weight. And the president at that time was like, why are people running? Is there a fire or something? I go, no, they just kind of like want to work out, whatever. And then 2 months later, after the Biggest Loser finished, we saw this huge transformation. With an employee, her name is Maria, she lost 50 pounds. And it was just working out, health, we were helping with nutrition. We hired people to help us with nutrition. And the transformations were so amazing that started the journey. As of last Friday, was the Biggest Loser for this year. And last Friday, we lost 3,700 pounds. I always joke with the employees that we want to lose two whales. You know, that's my goal. And two whales are around 16,000 pounds. So we still have a long way to go, but that's the goal. And what we're seeing is bigger than the employee. So the transformation of the employee is huge, but it goes to the family. It's the kids. It's the spouse. And think about the next generation. If you see your parents being overweight and everybody's overweight, you think it's normal. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's more the health. We want those employees to be there for their kids until the kids need it, right? And what we were seeing is the habits for eating were horrible in a lot of people, and also the awareness. It wasn't like they wanted to do it. They just didn't know that they could do it in a budget. A lot of people think that to be healthy, you have to be rich, or you have to have a gym membership of a trainer. And you don't have to. You can do a lot of stuff without it. So educating the employees of eating better within a budget. Having the gym here free and they can go anytime has been huge. And promoting, we have the Biggest Loser. We do a 5K every year. So getting them trained to the 5K is huge. Last year, we had 250 people participating on the 5K, which was huge. And whoever ran faster than me got an iPad. So it's just kind of creating incentives where they can go and get healthy for them and their families.
First of all, as I was thinking about that, you walk into most factories, you find a lot of overweight people because they have a sedentary job and they're just standing there at their station doing what they have to do and not moving around very much. You don't see that in your factory. But what kind of training do you offer your people on an ongoing basis?
So it depends on the job. So there is a lot of in the job training because you have to have the hands-on to do it. We also try to do offsite training. We have done English classes, Spanish classes, Excel classes. We are doing lean training, you know, the principles of lean. And lean is a very, in my opinion, overused word, right? Like, what does that mean? To me, it's like common sense, but common sense is on the eyes of the beholder, right? So what we try to do is, what does lean mean for us? I think lean has a different meaning in different companies. The principles are the same. So making sure the employees are safe, that we're doing things efficiently, that we're doing things the right way. So things like making sure that education is there is part of it. So we have used a lot of funds from the state of Texas to do a lot of offsite training, sewing skills. Unfortunately, sewing is kind of a dying art. Sadly, a lot of people just doesn't want to sew anymore. And a sewer can make pretty good money, but a lot of the younger people doesn't think that is a good job. So we're trying to promote, what does that mean? Not everybody wants to go to school, and that's okay. But how do we promote those jobs? So we use funds from the state of Texas, maintenance, equipment training. So it just depends on the year and the time and the needs that we will invest on the training. But if you don't invest on your people, you're going to be dead.
Well, speaking of training, you came from Columbia to the United States. You were an intern. You were in the engineering field. Did you learn basic English in Columbia as an engineer before you got here, or did you have to fight through speaking Spanish to become English-speaking when you got here?
I was very blessed that my parents had a big kind of value. They saw a lot of value in education, so they sent me to Canada to learn English. So I spent 6 months in Victoria on the west coast of Canada studying English at the University of Victoria. So I learned, I knew a little bit of the foundation of English when in Colombia, going through high school and college, but I spent 6 months only studying English. And I came to Dallas, and I remember my mom called me the first day I came to Dallas to do my internship, and she says, how's it going? I go, you wasted your time. I don't understand anything that people says here. You know, Canadians have that British, on the West Coast, that British English, and people is here, it's like, you all, and howdy, and I was like really confused. But I learned Dallas English like through the job and just talking to people.
But then again, moving from Columbia to the west coast of Canada must have been a shock for your system.
Completely.
And you probably enjoyed it.
Where I come from in Colombia is a city called Medellin, which is in the middle of the country, and it's called the city of the eternal spring. So the weather is amazing. It's 75 degrees all year round. And because we are by the equator, we don't have the seasons that you have in the U.S. or Canada. Victoria is probably one of the most mild weather in Canada, I would say. We don't have the extremes like Toronto or Quebec or anything like that. So it was shocking just because it rained all the time. So I wasn't used to that. But I think what was more shocking is coming from Medellin, Colombia to Victoria was a big shock socially. You know, I grew up in Colombia in the 80s where fun, a lot of fun things were happening. And then you go from just kind of watching things happening very violent, unfortunately, to a place where it was so peaceful that I was like, whoa, I didn't know the world was like this. So I had a big adjustment that way. It was a good adjustment, but it was an interesting adjustment going from Medellin, Colombia to Victoria, Canada, for sure.
And then the adjustment coming to Dallas, Texas.
Oh, another adjustment.
In learning Dallas speak and understanding Correct. How to interact with those in the Southwest. Well, the question that I want to ask you is advice for other female business leaders, because you've come from obstacles you had to overcome. A, you did not speak English. B, you're an immigrant to the United States. C, you're a female. D, you didn't know this business when you got here other than the internship. So talk about how you overcame those obstacles and advice you give other females, whether they're immigrants or not, in becoming a business leader.
I think the first thing that you have to do is not be afraid. You know, you don't have to know all the answers. I think as females, we're a little bit more careful jumping into a challenge. And sometimes you just figure it out. And don't be afraid of making mistakes. Also surround yourself with people that supports you, that is willing to just let you go through the learning curve. I think I was very lucky that way, that I have that support system. Don't be afraid of saying, I don't know, and work harder than anybody else. I think that when you're not afraid of just putting the time, the results will come. Maybe not right away, but just they will come. And if you're in the right environment, they will come. Because a lot of people is fortunately in the wrong environment. So if you put the work and you don't see the results, maybe not in the right place, and you have to go into the right place. So I would say work hard for what you believe on. Be passionate. If you're not passionate about what you're doing, you're probably doing the wrong thing. So I would say the first thing is try it. What is the worst that can happen? You go back to zero and start again.
And there's worse things than that happening, and you wouldn't know unless you tried it.
Correct.
Your business is a lot like the clothing business in that there are styles, and styles change. And I'm sure you're coming up with new designs, new furniture all the time. It's 2019 now. What's the future of American leather? What do you have in store that you can let out of the bag that people might want to look forward to should they have an interest in checking out American leather at AmericanLeather.com?
I think the design changes, like you said, constantly. Colors, trends, things like that. And that's kind of hard to predict. What we do is we follow a lot of what the Europeans are doing. So our style of furniture is a little bit more modern, more transitional. So we follow a lot of what Europe does as far as fashion goes. So simplicity, I think, is a big trend. Like, people doesn't want big stuff. They just want something simple with a lot of comfort. So how do you hide the comfort and still make it look beautiful is a huge thing. I think the other big trend is innovation as far as using technology in furniture, but doesn't make it look like a transformer. So how do you charge your phone? How do you charge your computer? How do you put heat or cold, or how you change positions, but it doesn't look like it can do all of that. So I think hiding technology, but still being there, is going to be a big trend in the next couple of years.
Well, tell people how they can find out more about American Leather.
I think the best way to find out about American Leather is AmericanLeather.com. So if you go to the website, if you go to find a dealer, you put your zip code, and it would recommend the closest dealer to you. So that would be the fastest way.
Veronica, this has been a wonderful interview, finding out about this, because I would suggest people go to AmericanLeather.com, whether they're interested in buying furniture now or not, but just to see what you have that can be unique to their home. So, yes, I would go there. But thank you very much for being a guest on our show.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
We just spoke with Veronica Schnitzius. Veronica is president of American Leather. It's been great having you, as I mentioned, and thanks to our listeners for listening to us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.